This podcast episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/SFBRP. Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed. And for everyone to download and listen to, you know the score. So I'd give some news about the kind of feedback and all the things I've got up to since I last recorded a podcast, but I recorded it less than 24 hours ago. That was The Scar. And then I finished the book that I'm going to review today, which is called Red Shirts by John Scorsese, except it isn't called Red Shirts. It's actually called something a little bit more. On Goodreads.com, it's just called Red Shirts. However, on Audible.com, because I listened to it as an audiobook, it's called Red Shirts, a novel with three codas. And the three codas are important, and I would just like to say there is going to be a coda to this podcast as well. So if you think that I'm going in one direction with this review, and you're thinking, wow, what's going on here, Luke's really railing on this book, just stick around until the coda at the very end, and then you'll get the full story. So that's something to think about, so stick with it to the end and then you'll understand this review that I'm gonna do. So like I say, Red Shirts by John Scorsese. Why do I read it? Well, I saw it come up on some people like marked it as to read and were reading it on Goodreads.com, and it came up on the sidebar here in Audible on Audible.com, and I clicked on it and thought, oh, that's interesting. It's a short book, only 7 hours and 41 minutes, it says, and I read a John Scorsese novel before called Old Man's War, and I really enjoyed the beginning, and then the middle was absolutely terrible, but then it really picked up in the last third and the last quarter until overall I actually pretty, you know, enjoyed it quite a bit once the story actually picked up at the end. And I thought, well, I'll give John Scorsese another go. It's a short novel. And also it had I had this travel day, kind of two travel days, and I knew that I'd be able to finish all of the entire thing within 2 days of listening to the audiobook. And I'm reading some other books at the moment, those paper books and ebooks, but I didn't bring them with me on the travels for some reason. Well, I've got the ebooks, of course, but the other ones I don't have with me. So I thought, well, this will be a good thing to consume, to listen to while travelling. So I did. Red Shirts. You probably know the concept of Red Shirts and the prologue to this novel, which is kind of like a little mini short story just in its own right. Kind of it sets it all up. The Red Shirts are, of course, the idea in the Star Trek the original series, where Kirk and Spock or whoever was going down, one or two of the main characters would go down to the planet. They'd go on what's called an away mission, and on the away mission they'd always take with them a number of officers or other crew members or security people and technicians and scientists, and these guys would always wear red shirts and they'd always all die because it was a good way to show, uh-oh, there's a big monster that's going to kill people. How do we show how dangerous it is? Well, let's kill off these supporting characters. Let's kill off these extras. And in the prologue, and actually the blurb to the book, let me just go to the blurb here. Publisher's summary. Ensign Andrew Dahl has just been assigned to the Universal Union capital ship Intrepid, flagship of the Universal Union since the year 2456. It's a prestige posting, and Andrew is thrilled all the more to be assigned to the ship's xenobiology laboratory. Life couldn't be better until Andrew picks up on the fact that, one, every away mission involves some kind of lethal confrontation with alien forces. Two, the ship's captain, its chief science officer, the handsome Lieutenant Kerensky, those three could always survive these confrontations. And three, at least one low-ranked crew member is, sadly, always killed. So that really sets it up. And that's what you get in the prologue, which is a really quite interesting look into the mind of what really goes on inside the mind of a red shirt when he goes down and hangs out with Captain Kirk. Of course, the captain is called something different here. Oh, it's not here. I can't remember the captain's name. But then again, he's only a minor character in this story. So then the main story begins, and I would kind of outline the plot. But instead of outlining the plot to this book, I thought I would just outline a plot to an episode of a TV show called Star Trek, No, it's not. It's called Red Dwarf. Sorry, I was just looking up something here. So Red Dwarf, a three-part miniseries, which was broadcast in 2009. Part two, it says like this. Part two begins with the discovery that Red Dwarf crew inhabit an invalid dimension. Zeroing in on the nearest valid reality, the portal sucks the crew to Earth in 2009, only to find that in this world, their adventures have been a fictional television show called Red Dwarf. As a result of the discovery, they quickly accept that they themselves are merely fictional characters and find the DVD of Back to Earth special. They are alarmed to discover that they are to die at the end of the final part. They resolve to track down their creators and plead for more life. And then part three goes on. The crew track down actor Craig Charles, who plays Lister, on the set of Coronation Street and ask him to reveal the location of their creator. After locating him, you know, the creator, blah, 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 reveals that he intends to kill the crew, having tired of them, but yeah, and it goes on like that. So, you know, that's it. Unfortunately, this really, really, the plot itself really doesn't add very much more to it. I mean, I'm talking now about Red Shirts. Really doesn't add anything more than, say, Red Dwarf Back to Earth Part 2, Episode 2. Except that in Red Shirts, it isn't an alternative dimension, but time travel. And there's this massive plot hole, but, you know, by then I was so disappointed that the big twist for them acting, like, the reason why the Red Shirts were like Red Shirts and were always doing the things that he did and all of the other things were going, was actually that they are part of a TV show that is that they are acting out, that somebody else is writing, and that they are having to act out, and they lose their own free will in the thing. Now, you may think, okay, thanks, Luke, you just spoiled the whole thing. Now, this really isn't much of a spoiler, because, like, the big reveal, it's not even a mystery. This book isn't even set up as a mystery, because the big reveal comes around about, like, certainly in the first quarter, someone actually says, just stay away from the narrative. And you're like, oh, well, that's given it all away, hasn't it? Anyway, so there's not a lot there if you've seen anything like that. But then I was thinking, well, okay, I don't really mind reading a story that I've read before again or seen before. You know, as long as the author does it well and puts a different spin on it. And I've seen, you know, I mentioned this before when I reviewed The Hunger Games. It's like, I have Battle Royale on DVD. I've watched it. I only watched it once, you know, and it was okay. But then Hunger Games, I'm not just going to discard or dismiss as a ripoff of Battle Royale, you know, because, you know, Suzanne Collins did something new and something interesting and different take for a different time. And I enjoy, you know, First Contact stories and Big Dumb Object stories and disaster movies and all those kind of things. And you can see, you know, a disaster movie of this kind and then another one of the same kind of thing. You know, two meteors hitting Earth, two volcanoes going off. You know, these movies come in twos. And I was thinking, well, maybe what we're going to have with John Scalzi is like a new take on the idea of people discovering that they're fictional characters and that they don't have free will. Unfortunately, it turns out that Scalzi adds almost nothing to the idea that I've not seen before, except one point, which I'll bring up later in the Coda one to this podcast. But within the Codas and also other points of the movie, he actually name checks other things. He actually name checks Star Trek in this, even though the world that this is set in isn't Star Trek. He has the characters reference Star Trek because Star Trek exists in their universe that they're taking part in. And he name checks The Last Action Hero and Stranger Than Fiction and some other things as well, but those two stood out for me because they're two movies which kind of take on the same topic, you know, where the protagonists discover that they're fictional characters and or being scripted. I think Stranger Than Fiction, he's not a fictional character, he's a real character, but because someone starts writing his life, the person writing his life takes over. And again, not really giving in away anything about Stranger Than Fiction, Last Action Hero, because I think they're well known, the stories of the movies are well known. And there's a huge section at the end of Last Action Hero where, like, there's an injured person, and because they're injured, hey, let's get him back into the fictional reality so he can be healed by the magic of screenwriting. And that is just like the end of Last Action Hero. Also, there's another point about the movie, Last Action Hero, that in Red Shirt, Scalzi, like, calls it out for being a terrible movie. And I was, when I read that, I was like, wait a moment, wait a moment. Last Action Hero is way more fun than Red Shirts. It's got way better dialogue, way better action, better scripts. The characters make sense. There's some really classic characters in Last Action Hero. The bad guy with the false eye and, you know, the animated cat. And even Arnie and the kid, sure, that, you know, the kid can be a bit annoying, but he's playing the role of an annoying kid. And all this other stuff is going on. It's sort of like way more... strangely enough, intelligently self-aware of being an action movie and way more happy to embrace the action moviness of itself. So, like I say, it's not a great movie, but it explores the idea of characters realizing that a character's in a movie far more economically. They even do the same retiree joke. Of course, they're both knowing it's sort of like, oh, my last day on the job and I died, or my last day, you know, it was the last week at work before I retire and I died. You know, that's done in many things. I think it's called retiree. I think that's a Simpsons reference when they call it retiree, when you die the week that you're going to retire from your thing. And the Last Action Hero joke, retiree joke, is better than in Red Shirts. And then another part of Red Shirts, there's someone trying to go off script. And it's like, okay, like, so we know we're being scripted, so let me not go on script and I will make it so that the script writer can't follow this. I'll take over, you know, and I will take control. And it was just like the scene in Stranger Than Fiction where Will Ferrell? I think it's the only movie I've seen him where I actually really like him as a character. It's like he decides, okay, I'm not gonna do anything for an entire day. I'm gonna make this the most boring book ever, and let's just see what the author can do. Let's just see what the narrator can do with me to make this an interesting day. And the same thing happens. I mean, it's not told in exactly the same way, but it's like, okay, it's the same problem which they try and solve in the same way, and kind of the same thing. The same thing happens to them, really strangely. The same kind of mechanical... again, I don't want to give it too much away. And then also, spoilers, slight spoilers for Stranger Than Fiction and Red Shirts. But the protagonist goes through... I mean, it depends which one you've read or seen and that you'll notice the other one. The protagonist goes through the exact same drama at the end with the same impaling motif in on a slightly different scale. But it's both there for both of them. I'm like, wait a second. And one movie that isn't name-checked in Red Shirts is the movie Galaxy Quest, which I actually do think is a much better, much better movie than Red Shirts is a book, and it kind of explores the same kind of ideas. You know, there's the red shirt character in there, and again, there's the whole idea of these characters who actually, in this case, are real characters who are discovering that elsewhere they're fictional. Not that they're fictional, but they have to sort of fulfill the roles and try and work on the scripts. And there's a lot of crossover. There's a lot of stuff which is mentioned in Red Shirts, which isn't mentioned... is mentioned in both Galaxy Quest and Red Shirts, but Red Shirts doesn't acknowledge Galaxy Quest exists, which I think is a pity. Or maybe it did in one of the coders, but I think maybe it slipped by me. But I think what you should do is, if you've got 7 hours, how long is this audiobook again? Let me open up the Audible page here. Yeah, 7 hours and 41 minutes. I reckon in 7 hours and 41 minutes, you should watch a marathon of these three movies, Galaxy Quest, and then Last Action Hero, and then Stranger Than Fiction, in that order, because then you get the prologue of Red Shirts, which is like Galaxy Quest, where you get the idea of, you know, someone living in a TV show and not really quite sure what's going on. And then you get The Last Action Hero, which is the main story and someone realizing that they're fictional, and the more adventure-y kind of stuff and the silly plot points and them going backwards and forwards not in time in that case, but, you know, going backwards and forwards and things. And then you get Stranger Than Fiction, which fits in very nicely with the three coders at the end of... at the end of Red Shirt. So really, I think it matches up really well and probably lasts about 7 hours. Just watch those three movies and you'll get way more enjoyment out of them. All three of those movies are way, way funnier than the main story in Red Shirts, and just overall much, much better. However, you may be thinking, well, look, you know, what if I've not seen those? What, it doesn't matter if they're not doing anything new. Does he do a good job of it? Well, not only does he not do as good job as the Galaxy Quest and Last Action Hero and Stranger Than Fiction and those other things. It's like, what if you've never seen those movies, or you've never seen Red Dwarf or any of these other things? You've never seen all that. You just know Star Trek. If all you know is Star Trek, like, is this a good approach? You know, is it a fresh idea? Does it go, you know, if it's not a fresh idea, sorry, does it still do a good job? And I must say, it's kind of like half and half. I actually quite enjoyed the parody aspect of it. And I liked how, you know, Scorsese was talking about it. Like, you know, there's lots of people who talk about Star Trek and go, oh, why are there no seatbelts on the command deck? Why do the command deck consoles explode? You know, why do they always get hit by exactly one torpedo and then they manage to avoid the next torpedoes? Why don't they just avoid the first ones? And there's loads and loads of stuff like that in Red Shirts. And I actually really enjoyed that, like the deconstruction of a sci-fi TV series and trying to work it out. And what I like that he added to this was, it's not just like, hey, look at all of this. Hey, look at that. It's funny. It's like, well, how will that actually affect them? And, you know, like when in between the scenes, when they're really acting, what happens to them? Do they keep acting like that between the scenes? And in Red Shirts, it explores quite a lot of the ideas that, like, in between them, the main characters suddenly stop acting and they go back to being normal people again. And you're sort of like, suddenly, oh, what's happened? You know, they've dropped out of character. Oh, we're in a commercial break. Okay, guys, we've all got about 5 minutes. Let's work out all the stuff that we don't need to say in the, you know, and there's like that kind of stuff. And there is lots of good gags about that and lots of really interesting ideas in that way. Unfortunately, everything else is kind of lacking in interest, like in the same way that the story is lacking in imagination. Like, and the story is just not very good. It's not very well put together, despite, you know, it being totally derivative. The characters don't do interesting things enough. You know, I mentioned before in the blurb, it says everything's going well until Andrew picks up on the facts that 1, 2, 3. And it's like, no, he doesn't pick up on those facts. What do I like about science fiction? I like people working stuff out. I like people working out theories and testing them and then using those theories to, like, change themselves or change the world. You know, that's what science fiction is about. And in this novel, Andrew Dahl turns up and he finds in a weird situation, and almost immediately everyone else says, hey, do you notice this? Are you noticing this? Are you noticing that? So nobody actually lets him notice anything by himself. Everybody else notices the same thing and then just tells him. And I was thinking, wouldn't it have been better, like, if he turned up and nobody mentioned it to him, and then over the course of some time he noticed it himself? And then at one point it's like, ah, well, what's really going on here? And other people say, well, here's what you need to know. And then they just tell him the rules about how what he needs to know. But then there's still, like, why is it all like that? He knows the what, he knows, like, the how to live with it, and then it's sort of like, you know, what's the secret? And I'm thinking, oh, maybe he's going to work out the secret. But no, instead, he meets up with someone else, and that someone else has already worked out all the answers, and then he just gets told them. So, first of all, people tell him that he's in a weird situation, and then people tell him the rules to live in that weird situation, and then someone else tells him all of the secrets and the answers behind that situation. He does go on to test the theory and to work out, and then, you know, his most important function is telling other people, like, hey, let's do this, and hey, let's do that, let's go. But really, I was just like, oh, it's like in Snow Crash. What I really hated about Snow Crash was that hero protagonist, you'd think the main job of him was to actually advance the plot, but no, someone else gives him something, a librarian, and the librarian just spends about 20 pages telling him shit. And then that's all. So he doesn't actually have to go and find out anything himself about all of the stuff that the librarian told him. He just gets handed it on a plate, and it's like, how can I, you know, I mean, that's another meta book as well, but it's like, how can I, like, enjoy the things, how can I get invested in this character when everything that they're doing is just being handed to them on a plate? So, you know, and that kind of thing just happens time and time again. Another thing which I think is done really badly is the tone of the novel, of the main story, let me put it that way, of the biggest section, in, you know, which isn't the prologue and which isn't the codas. And I was thinking, well, maybe it's a horror, so they go down and it is a bit horrific. But then it's not horrific enough. The people aren't scared. And that's a bit strange. I wanted it to be a horror. I was thinking, hey, isn't it great? Like, these people are being sent into these situations and they know that any time they can be killed. And it's almost expected that they're going to be killed because they're the Red Shirts and the dread. You know, they've seen other friends and the other people go down and not make it back and all this other stuff. But it really, you know, like, you know, it sets up in the prologue that they lose their free will and are subjected to these horrible fates, but it doesn't play to that strength because it doesn't play it straight enough. It's always like always joking all the time. It's like, oh yeah, what about this? Watch out over there. Oh no, a monster. And it kind of plays up the jokiness that we now see in Star Trek, whereas at the time, the characters in Star Trek, those guys really were scared, and the characters in the Red Shirts really did get killed, you know, and the whole thing that I thought this would be about, it just takes it too lightly. It just takes it too jokingly. And like I said before, there's no real mystery because it's just given away straight away. And there's some adventure, but it's like really hard to care about the characters, like when they're kind of written specifically to have no backstory unless it's needed for the script, which is all, you know, telegraphed in advance. And the Red Shirts who are going to die are telegraphed in advance, you know, for thematic reasons, which I'll get onto later. And other characters are set up again for thematic reasons, which I'll go into later. But just all the time you're just thinking, well, this is just not very good, and it's not funny enough. It really, I mean, if it's meant to be, it's so light that I think it's meant to be funny throughout, but a lot of the jokes are just like really like base, like, oh, fucking hell, like, and just swearing. And it's like, oh, people in Star Trek costumes are swearing. Is that what we're meant to think? Oh, and they're having sex behind the scenes. And we never see them having sex on the show, but then, you know, we're just, despite Kirk putting it around a bit, you know, but you're just thinking like, oh, right, you know, it's not just Kirk having sex, and who's the other, Riker, going off and having sex with people. It's actually, you know, all of the characters are having sex all the time. Yeah, great, you know. And there's other people, and there's just like bad language and references to sex, which doesn't really don't add anything. There's like a few times and I was like, oh, that's mildly amusing, I guess. But the situations that they get into just aren't very funny, and the overall idea has been done before. So the idea that people turn out to be fictional characters in a TV show and other people writing, it's not actually very funny, because, you know, I've seen it 5 or 6 times before in different movies and in other forms as well. So what else here? Yeah, characters. I'll talk about the characters, but there's really almost nothing to say. Like, our main guy was once a religious person, which affects him in like no way at all. And then there's another character's defining feature is that she is a female. And yet she says inappropriate things. She swears a bit and, you know, and tells people to give her a blowjob and things like that. And you're just like, well, really, that's it? And then there's this other character who's like heir to the second largest fortune in the galaxy. And we are told that because he is so rich, people treat him in different ways. But we're told that at the beginning of the novel. And then we go on to see no evidence that anybody treats him any differently to anyone else at all. And that's the kind of thing. And you think, really? Is this the way it's going to go? And, you know, And all the characters, they're saying stuff to each other, but I don't really care about anything to them. Even when they say interesting things to each other and they say clever things to each other, I can't work out who is saying what, because all of the characters have exactly the same tone of voice, which is John Scholes's, and they've all got exactly the same sense of humour, which is John Scholes's. He's just not very good at writing characters that stand out, which really came to a head in Old Man's War, when the thing that I found like a really interesting passage at the beginning was when he, like, I can't remember the name of the lead character in that, but he is being singled out. Well, not being singled out. The drill sergeant is saying, okay, who here is from California? Right, you guys go over there and run over there like 5 miles and back again. And who here is Chinese? Well, you go as well. Who here is black? Well, I don't like you either. Who here is Christians? Well, I don't like you. And Muslims, I don't like you. Who here is an atheist? Well, I don't like you either. Who does this? You kind of define his character by stripping away all of the things that would otherwise define him. And in the end, it turns out he's not special in other way. There is nothing that defines his character, except it turns out he was a advertising copy guy. He wrote stuff, and it just happens to be that that's the key to his character, that once he was clever and he could write stuff, which goes on to have absolutely no impact on the rest of his character at all, that he isn't a Christian, but he's not an atheist, and he's not religious, and he's not all of this, and he's not that, and he's not this, and he's not clever, and he didn't go to college, and he's not politically left, and he's not politically right. Turns out he's the most boring character ever, and nothing to distinguish him from anybody else, except his witty dialogue, which everybody else has witty dialogue, except it's not actually all that witty. I thought actually the most interesting character is this guy, Lieutenant Kerensky, because Kerensky is one of the main characters in the Intrepid adventure in the Chronicles of the Intrepid or whatever it is. But then he actually goes on to sort of more to be more sympathetic with the Red Shirts and becomes involved in their story. So he's like a bridge character from one world to another. And it's like he actually has some kind of internal conflict, and he's got and he comes to realize stuff about his own life, and he has this character arc that he goes through. And as that goes on, I'm like, well, that's an interesting character. Why aren't we following his story? But no, we've got to follow the story of the boring person who doesn't do anything, that doesn't distinguish himself in any way, who's surrounded by other boring people who aren't, or also not distinguished in any way. And you're just like, well, why are we spending time with these characters? They're red shirts for a reason. And of course you realize they're red shirts for the reason, but it's like they're red shirts for a reason because they're boring. Why is it that the female character, like, oh, it's really annoying. Anyway, moving on to science and technology. Yes, it's Star Trek, but played for laughs. There's actually some very clever things. There's one thing, there's the box, which is the Deus Ex Machina box, and I thought that was very clever. And also, just like the show, there's a lot of stuff which is explained away with hand-waving nothingness. And it's like, well, what about this? Well, the script means this. Oh, okay, we'll do it then. Oh, why? What about this? Flying through the black hole, how does that work? Well, I'm not sure, but let's do it. Okay, it works. Good stuff. You know, and it's... there's lots of cleverness, like some bits of technology which explain what is going on in Star Trek, but a lot of the time it's just like, well, it was in Star Trek, so we can just have it here, right? Yeah? 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 Okay, let's go for it. And you're like, well, didn't Red Dwarf play all of these games like 20 years ago? Anyway, next up, the writing. So, for the start, I don't find Skulls' dialogue very funny. Unfortunately, a lot of the book is dialogue, and this is my main complaint, or one of my main complaints about the writing of this main part of the story. Some scenes stood out as clever, with clever bits of dialogue, but mostly it was a drag, and you know, there's many points, there's a thing that I really don't like, is where characters discuss what they're going to do, and then leave to go and do it, and then we don't see them doing it, then we just hear them reporting back, which can work out, but it doesn't actually progress the plot. People talking about what they're going to do, it really doesn't, you need to see them try it and fail, or try it and succeed, which is a very strange thing. Like in Ocean's 11, you never see them laying out exactly what they're going to do, because then we might as well not see them do it. But seeing them do it is actually a lot more interesting, even though nothing actually goes wrong and everything just plays out as they want to and they get the money at the end. You're like, okay, that's great. And it's like the Italian job. We don't see them planning all of the intelligence job. We see them preparing it, but when they actually do it, they don't say, right, we're gonna drive across a bridge, and then we're going to drive on top of this building, and then we're going to drive around this racetrack, and then we're going to drive through these traffic lights here, and then we're going to jump across the top of the building here, we're going to drive over there. You don't see them planning it out, because when you get to it, you want it to be a surprise. However, in this, we see them saying what they're going to do, and then we miss out all the surprises when they happen. Again, we're being restricted to one point of view for thematic reasons, which I'll get into later, but it's just not very good. I'll get more into the dialogue as well and those conversation scenes. But also, there's very, very, very little description. It relies on you just assuming everything is exactly like Star Trek. And at one point, we're told Lieutenant Kerensky, you know, he's running along and he looks good running, but I don't remember any description of him actually running at all. You know, there's a lot of time spent with people without their pants on, which, again, British English, pants means underwear, so anyone without their pants means they're naked from their, you know, you can actually see their genitals, so it's actually unintentionally funnier to read these scenes in British English than it is to translate it from the American English, which means he's without his trousers. That's actually what it is, not without anything on his bottom. Anyway, so you get these we're told that people are good-looking, we're told that people are beautiful, and we're told all that kind of stuff, but we don't really get any description. We're just like, okay, well, I'm guessing Lieutenant Kerensky with the, you know, the young lieutenant with the Russian name is it Chekhov? Again, I'm failing on my Star Trek trivia here. Yeah, I guess it's Chekhov. Anyway, so there's not a lot of description. And the main part of the book, like the main story after the prologue, starts with two people meeting in a space station. I'm like, yeah, in a space station. And they're going, check it out. There's the Intrepid. It's the Intrepid. Look at us. Look at it. Look at the Intrepid. And I'm like, yeah, I want to look at it. And then nothing. I don't know what the Intrepid looks like. We don't even get a hint of what it looks like. You know, a really great prologue where it's describing the cave and describing the characters and describing what the people are thinking. And I was like, yeah, I want more of this. And then we got into the main story itself, and then we don't get that anymore. We just dive straight into this conversation, which lasts for ages, setting up two characters in the most boring way possible. and they're just introducing themselves to each other, and there's no subtext or subtlety to them introducing to each other, and there's no, like, in the whole conversation, no chemistry between them, because the subtext of them introducing them to each other is like, hey, I want to know who you are. Who are you? This is me, and this is my backstory, and I am this, and this is a little bit about me, and this is my backstory, and you're like, oh, fuck's sake, it's like just the worst aspects of a bad TV show where you have two characters meet and just say each other's names to each other. And you're just like, oh, this is terrible. And again, thematically, talk about this later, and you just like, oh, fucking hell. But it's not like, you know, Star Wars, where you go, hey, check it out, Darth Vader, only you could be so bold. And in that one line, you just sort of explain everything that you need to know about, Darth Vader, and then he goes, you're part of a rebel alliance and a liar, take her away. And you know, again, everything that you need to know about Princess Leia, just in that, like, five, like, exchanges, there's just so little there, and it wraps up everything on, and here, just, conversation goes on and on and on. I'm like, wait a second, there's a starship out the window, this is going to be the main setting for the entire rest of the book, tell me what it looks like. But we don't know what it looks like, we don't get any description at all. Now, actually, I just was reading, a Star Wars novel, and for various reasons, and we just cut straight to the action. It's just like, hey, and they were flying along in an X-wing, and they don't describe what the X-wing is like, because that's Star Wars, and the author knows that you know what an X-wing looks like, and he just says, it was in an X-wing with C-3PO, and you don't need to say anything more about that, and it assumes that you know what Star Wars is, and that's great. However, in the main section of this novel, we're on the Intrepid, but we don't get to know what it is. We have to just assume it's like Star Trek. But in Red Shirts, it isn't Star Trek. It's Intrepid, the Chronicles of the Intrepid, and it's not the Federation starship. It's a United Universal Unity, whatever it's the W. The I can't remember. Yeah, and I was just like, well, that's not it, you know. So. But then you get Galaxy Quest, and the ship is obviously, a homage to the Star Trek spaceships. It's sort of like a mixture of lots of different designs there, and it's really well put together. And as it comes out of the parking slot, you know, they scrape the side of it, and it's, you know, the design of the ship has real plot significance for the last parts of the movie. It actually matters what the Galaxy Quest ship looks like, which is probably called the Quest. I actually can't remember the name of the movie, but then the Intrepid is just like this nothing place, and everything that they do, they're just in rooms which are just nothing in your mind, except if you're meant to fill it in from Star Trek. But we're also told in the movie itself, not in the movie, in the story itself, that this is certainly not Star Trek. It really isn't Star Trek, it's something different. And you're like, well, what is it if it's something different? And we're never told. More on that later. Now, bringing it on to the thing that made this novel really stand out to me in a bad way, like one of the main detraction points of this novel, like I said, is the dialogue scenes, the unending dialogue scenes. Unfortunately, made even worse by the narrator, who is Will Wheaton, who I didn't realize it was Will Wheaton when I first downloaded it. I was just like, wow, this guy is an absolutely, utterly terrible audiobook narrator. I was like, what the fuck's why is this guy, how did he get the job? It turns out Will Wheaton is Wesley Crusher in Star Trek. Of course I knew that, but I didn't realize it was his voice. I didn't realize he was it. So I was like, okay, that could be good casting, except he can't, he's terrible. He's just a terrible actor. He has one voice, the narrator, and all of the characters speak in exactly the same voice, at exactly the same pitch, at exactly the same tempo, at exactly everything that goes on is all in exactly the same voice. Nationalities, male, female, one voice, one tone, one accent for everything and everyone. And it's really bad because the opening conversation is between someone called Dahl and someone called Duval. So Dahl says this, Duval says that. Duval says this, Duval says that. Dahl and Duval. Dahl says this, Duval said that. And it's like, something, 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 Dahl said. Something, 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 Duval said. Something, 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 Dahl said. Something, something, Duval said. Something, Dahl said. Something, Duval said. Something, actually, I maybe play, see if I can play a little clip into this just so you see how bad this is. But let me explain how bad it is. It's not just that like I'm literally not changing my voice. Something, 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 Dahl said, something, something. Dahl and Duval, one is male and one is female. However, it never says something, 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 he said, something, 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 she said. It never goes there. It always says Dahl and Duval, which are the second names. It's not Mia and Andy, which suddenly you get something about their characters. You even know who is who. And, like, multiple points. And this is, I'm not even kidding, this is a minute and a half into the main story. We've been introduced to two characters. They're having a conversation. And it is it's really, really difficult for me to not just to know who is speaking at what point, because the voices are totally the same, but also which one is which one is female. And they're having a conversation. And even when Dahl says one thing, when they say Duvall said the next thing, I'm actually... Sorry, was that Duvall or Dahl? Because Dahl and Duvall sound very, very similar, especially the way that Will Wheaton says it. And I'm thinking, for the audiobook, and even for the main book, why do you have two characters with the same first letter, the same last letter, and with a UV in the middle for Duvall and an A, and a W and an A? It's just like, wow, have they just gone for two names exactly the same thing? And also, when I said before, it's like Dahl said, Duvall said, it's never... You know, sometimes, very, very rarely, sometimes it'll be Dahl asked. And sometimes, very rarely, it might be Dahl replied. And even more rarely, Dahl shouts something. And so it says Dahl shouted or Dahl whispered. But very, very, very rarely does it Dahl ever shout or whisper stuff. And if he does whisper it, Will Wheaton, such a bad audiobook narrator, he doesn't actually whisper. He actually just says it. And then at some other points, he doesn't actually say something. He says something like, Dahl said. And it's like, no, he didn't say He didn't. It's like, Dahl said, blah, 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 blah. And as I said before, it's never... anything but Dahl said and Duvall said. Like, it's always the character name, their second name, and then the word said. And it's never said Dahl or Dahl said this. And that's always really tricky. And also, you don't always need to say Dahl said. It's like Dahl said, and then he did this, and then he went and turned over here, and then he turned towards the door. Like that, it's always like Dahl said and turned towards the door and left. But if it was like something, 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 Dahl turned towards the door and left, you don't have to have Dahl said. You can use the action to move the scene on as the attribution. It's a really, really clever technique. In fact, it's not really clever. It's totally, utterly basic. But we have Dahl said, Duvall said, Dahl said this, Dahl said that. Now, the next thing that makes this even worse, you may think it's totally bad, like utterly terrible already and the worst conversation, and this is like a minute and a half into the start of the main story, and it's the worst reading of any audiobook conversation that I've ever heard, and yet it gets even worse because then more characters turn up and all of the characters say exactly the same words in exactly the same way.
I'm going to get myself something to drink, Hansen said. You guys want anything? Want me to get you another round? I'm fine, Dahl said. I could go for another, Duvall said, waggling her nearly empty bottle. One of the same? Hansen asked. Sure, Duvall said. Great, Hansen said, and clapped his hands together. So, I'll be right back. Keep this chair for me? You got it, Dahl said. Hansen wandered off in search of food and drink. He seems nice, Duvall said. He is, Dahl said. Not hugely full of personality, Duvall said. He has other qualities, Dahl said. Like paying for drinks, Duvall said. Well, yes, but that's not what I was thinking of, Dahl said. You mind if I ask you a personal question, Duvall said? Seeing as we've already covered my sexual preferences in this conversation, no, Dahl said.
Let me put it this way. The attribution always comes at the end of the first full sentence and often the end of the first, like the entire line that a character says. Now, when you have that text written on a page, you can see where the paragraph breaks. So you know that a new person is speaking. And even if the attribution is at the end of what the new character speaks, you can kind of see the attribution out the corner of your eye. You can sort of see the shape of the word which makes up their name, even though Dahl and Duvall might be a little bit too similar even there. But you think, well, you can see it out there. However, you combine total lack of voice acting with the fact that Scholes' characters are all written with the same voice and exactly the same mannerisms and the same sense of humour, and that the attribution always goes at the very end of the line that they said, and you're listening to it as an audiobook, it actually makes it impossible to know who is saying what until they've already said it, and then we get the name, and then we get the word said. It's impossible to picture in your head entire scenes of conversations between, like, if there was just two people in the conversation, you could kind of muddle through. It's like, okay, if it sounds like, if you can kind of think that the next person is saying something, you might be able to muddle through. But with three or more people, which is a large part of the book, is three or more people in a room talking to each other. As soon as one person ends a line, and you think, you're not sure because you can't see the paragraph break and you can't tell with Will Wheaton's voice that it is actually somebody else speaking next, and you're not even quite sure if it's someone speaking, it could still be the narration, but you're not sure about that. But then you have the choice, you might have like the choice of like three or four characters who are in the scene who might be saying the words that you're hearing, and you've got absolutely no way to tell which one is which. So then in your head, you've got to imagine every single person in the scene might be saying that line, and then in this weird kind of Schrodinger's cat kind of Schrodinger's narration kind of thing, you're holding all these possible outcomes of who might be saying this, this kind of like superposition of characters saying stuff in the scene. And then the whole line is played out, and the whole line is said, and then Will Wheaton says the name of the character, Duvall, and then he says the word said. And then the kind of the waveform collapses, and the cat is either dies or is alive. And then, I mean, you kind of discover who has just been saying that. And then, while you're going, okay, I said that, now I'm going to put it into the voice that I imagine that person to be speaking in, there's somebody else saying, but it might be the same person, because it might say, something, something, Doll said, something, something, something. And that last three something, somethings Doll said, he actually said all six somethings, but you don't know, because it can be like, something, 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 Doll said, something, 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 Duvall said, something, something, Doll said. And you're like, who said all of those somethings in the middle? Did Doll say, like, the first three, and Duvall say the second three, or, you know, how many of those? Yeah, it's just absolutely, utterly terrible, and it gets even worse. There's an even worse thing, because at one point, Doll is talking to someone called Mbeki, and Mbeki asks him what somebody else told him, like what somebody else said. And it's like, did he tell you something like this? Mbeki said. And then the reply is, he said pretty much those words he said to Mbeki. And so you get Dahl as a character saying what another character says. He said pretty much those words he said to Mbeki. And I thought that second he said was still what Dahl was saying, but in that case he didn't say Dahl, he said he said, and I thought, well, you've just said he said pretty much those words, and then when you say he said to Mbeki, and you just look at, I just listened to that, and I was like, what the fuck, and I actually stopped the book and actually typed out these words into my iPhone just to make sure I was doing it. And my girlfriend was like, what are you doing? What are you mumbling to yourself? I was like, I just have to keep this line in my head. He said pretty much those words he said to Mbeki. And it's like there isn't, like, Will Wheaton is so bad at acting, he doesn't know when to pause when an actor finishes talking. So you, even though the attribution is always the same, Mbeki said, he said, Duvall said, even sometimes that time you get confused.
Did they come in and quickly tell you what you needed, Collins said, or did they go on and on about a bunch of crap you didn't need to know? They went on a bit, yes, Doll said. Was the captain particularly dramatic? Cassaway asked. What is particularly dramatic in this context? Doll asked. Like this, Mbeki said, then grabbed both of Doll's shoulders and shook them. Damn it, man! There is no try! Only do! Doll set down the vial so it was not accidentally shaken out of his grip. He said pretty much exactly those words, he said to Mbeki. Well, they're some of his favorite words, Mbeki said, letting go.
There is only two exceptions to his bad acting, and that he has one dimension of acting skill, and that is not angry and angry. The only time an angry person stands out is that suddenly, like they're doing like now, I'm getting angry about this review and just how bad it is. Like, all of the non-angry people still blend together, but there'll be one person who suddenly starts talking. I'm getting pissed off around here. What the hell? What's going on? In fact, I'm acting way better than Will Wheaton. It's like, I am just talking louder because I am angry. And then somebody else replied, Duvall said. And now I am angry again, Andrew said. You know, and it's just like, oh, fuck. It's just one line. And then at one point, someone gets drunk and he starts slurring his words. And because he slurs his words, someone else gets drugged at one point. And they just start slurring words. And the person with the slurring words, you can actually tell, is different from the other people in the scene. Unfortunately, there's lots of other people in the scene who still get kind of slurred together. At one point, Duvall meets his superior, and he goes, yes, ma'am. And then he says, yes, ma'am, again, Duvall said. And then she says, stop appending ma'am to everything you say. It sounds like you have a vocal tic. However, it's not just appending mom to everything you say sounds like a vocal tic. Entire conversations goes past and there's only one form of attribution, which is Duvall said, Dahl said, Duvall said, Dahl said. He did diligently tell something less, and Becky said. He said pretty much those words, he said to him, Becky. Like, blah, 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 he said. Someone gets drunk, Luke said. And slurs his words, Duvall said. One dimension of emotion, Luke said. You know, angry person speaking, Duvall said. And it's like, at the end of every single word, Luke said, there is the attribution, Luke said. And you might think me saying Luke said at the end of everything I say, Luke said, is getting annoying just in this little part of this review, Luke said. Imagine a whole book, Luke said, where at the end of every single line Luke said, you actually get the attribution Luke said, sometimes told in a different kind of voice, Luke said, so you can distinguish it, Luke said, from the actual rest of it, Luke said. But sometimes Luke said, he just continues on with the same breath Luke said, and you don't actually know Luke said when one character is going on and Luke said, and when the next character is going, Luke said, because there's no pause, Luke said. And it's just like, Will Wheaton doesn't know how to read a comma. And you're just like, if you're going to read an audiobook of a best-selling, New York Times best-selling book, you should really be able to read a comma. Like, really. Really, you should be able to do that. So, let me move on now. This is the point of the book where I do my the new feature, which is the Audible advert. So, if you go to audibletrial.com/SFBRP, you can get one of 100,000 books for a 30-day free trial. You actually get any book that you want. Don't, for fuck's sake, do not pick Red Shirts. It's literally the worst introduction to audiobooks possible. It is the worst reading ever. I listened to it all because it was only 7 hours and it was kind of an interesting project of John Scholes's that I wanted to read, but otherwise, really don't do it. So instead, I'm going to recommend How About Another Screen Actor Who You Already Know. And you're used to his voice, and you think, well, you know, there's these guys over here like Jonathan Davis. Who's this guy? I mean, he could be a good audiobook narrator or not. I've never heard anything about him. And what about this guy, Grover Gardner? Well, I don't know him at all. How about this guy, this John Lee? What does he do? I don't know. You don't know any of these names, but there is a names that you know. They do get actors, you know, Hollywood actors and other actors that you know to actually narrate some of these books and projects. And one of the my favorite Hollywood narrator of an audiobook is Ethan Hawke. He narrated Slaughterhouse-Five by Kurt Vonnegut, and I gave that book 5 stars, and a lot of that, of my enjoyment of that book, was to do with Ethan Hawke's performance. And there's not, like, all the Billy said, Pilgrim said, and all these other kind of stuff that are going in there, but there is one repeating line all the way through, the famous, like, "and so it goes" line in Slaughterhouse-Five. Hawke, knowing that this repeating sentence might get a little bit tedious, might get a little bit tiresome if you just read it exactly the same way every single time, he actually puts different inflections on every time he says the words. And you may be thinking, well, why does he do that? It's because he's an actor! And actors make you feel stuff by using their voice to make you feel stuff. And especially if they only have their voice because it's an audiobook and they're reading the same words which mean different things at different times depending on context, they can bring that out by using their voice. So go to this link, check out this, audibletrial.com/SFBRP. Of course, there's a link right there on SFBRP.com if you're not sure about that. And you can sign up for a 33-free trial. You can get Slaughterhouse-Five. Absolutely for free. And it's really, really good. It's an awesome audiobook. Do not, whatever you do, do not download Red Shirts as your free audiobook trial. Anyway, it's yours. It's a free audiobook trial, but as I say, it means that after the 30-day trial, you've got to start paying. And of course, at that point, you can get a gold thing, and you can spend a little bit of money and get one book every month, or you can spend a little bit more money and get two books every month, two audiobooks every month. And they're yours forever, even if you don't continue the trial, or if you start the trial and cancel it, or even if you just do the 30-day free trial, the audiobook that you pick is yours forever. It stays in your library, even if you stop your subscription or never even start the subscription. And of course, you can play the audiobook on any device, like on your computer, in iTunes, on your computer, in any non-iTunes player. I don't actually know any. And of course, on your Android phone, on your Zune, on your iPod, your iPad, all these different devices. So go on, sign up for a free trial and get a free audiobook, and support not just yourself and your reading habits. Like you say, if you're going to do some traveling like me, audiobooks really, really great for that. But you also support, of course, the SFBRP. So check it out, audibletrial.com/SFBRP. that weird non non advert for this book out the way, I'm going to move back to my review of Red Shirts by John Scalzi, and I'm going to get to the coda, which is very important. I told you to stick around until the coda at the end of this, because this puts everything that I've said so far in context, because there are three parts to Red Shirts, and it actually says that on the Audible page, doesn't it? It says Red Shirts, a novel with three codas. So you get the prologue, which I really enjoyed, the novel, which was like, you know, I got through it, let me put it that way, and there was some interesting stuff in there, but it was very derivative story told pretty badly with very flat characters. And then you get onto the codas. And the codas I want to talk about now in this coda. The main point of the coda, I actually, what did I say this on goodreads.com? I think I put a, in my review that I just did when I finished the book, I said, full review on my podcast, SFB episode 162. I said, a lot to like, but much to dislike, and even more to make me crazy, plus some codas that seem to be written and included with the sole purpose of pissing me off, Luke said. That was, you know, the short of you. The codas with the sole purpose of pissing me off. I got to the end of the book and it stopped a bit early because I was like, oh yeah, the codas. But I didn't realise the codas were going to be like another 2 hours at the end of the book. So the main story is only like maybe 4.5 hours long, or maybe 5 hours long. And then you get like 2 hours of codas. And I thought the codas were going to be like short things, like bits of flash fiction, like the prologue. But they're actually three short stories in their own right. Each one lasting around about, 45 minutes, let's say. Maybe a bit more than that, I can't remember. But it felt like quite a long time. The first one comes up, and I stopped listening after 20 minutes. I was just like, what the fuck is going on here? I was just like, I just couldn't understand. I was like, wait a second, we were doing a story, right? This is a novel, right? So what the fuck is coda? And I was just reading it, and it was tedious, and it was written so badly. And I was like, what's going on? I'll just explain. In the main story, there's this character who's a script writer, and now what I'm reading in coda number one is a copy of a series of blog posts that this screenwriter makes about him having writer's block and about wanting suggestions to get over his writing block. And it was just terrible. There was a character who I hated. This screenwriter character who was writing this blog. I hated everything that he said. The writing was nasty, sarcastic, annoying, like really, really like sneering. Like this was the part where he goes, oh, this is terrible. I'm a screenwriter and I'm going to say, oh, Last Action Hero, terrible movie. And I'm like, well, fuck it. You wrote Red Shirts. You can't say anything bad about this. And I'm not saying you, as in the screenwriter, I'm talking about Scalzi at this point. I'm just like, this is terrible. And he's nasty to people, and he's sarcastic, and doesn't like people, and he's yet, like, taking advantage of them and wanting to help us. Like, this is utterly repulsive. And I couldn't understand it, so I stopped listening 20 minutes into it. I was just like, I can't put up with this. You know, I was travelling at the time. I remember now, I was standing on a plane, and I was going, fuck it, I'm just going to listen to some podcasts. I'm going to let my mind relax after 20 minutes of bile and spite and hate, and I was just like, this is terrible. And so then later on in the evening, I was chatting to a guy called Tamahome, who you may know if you listen to the SFF audio podcast regularly. He often in there, and he was also reading Red Shirts at the moment. And I said, well, how far have you got? And he's like, oh, I'm about 150 pages in. He says, did he get to the codas? And I'm like, yeah, I'm 20 minutes in, but I had to stop. I couldn't do it. And he's like, well, are they worth it? And I was like, well, I don't know. So what I did, I went online and I actually I decided to look at some reviews, and it seemed like people who actually hated the overall, like, hated the main story really, really liked the codas. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And the people who really enjoyed the main story really hated the codas and thought it really brought the book down at the end. And I was like, well, I didn't hate the main story. You know, I hated the narration. I thought it was badly written, but, you know, I bad feelings about it, certainly. So I was thinking, well, maybe if somehow the codas are going to be the best bit of the book, what's going to happen here? So what I did, I decided to get through to the end of the first coda, and suddenly I was like, oh fuck, now I understand, oh fuck. And then the next coda was actually really, really good, and the third coda also really, really good. And I was like, what the fuck? I was like, did you just do that? And yeah, the whole point of the codas is to ask the question, like, the whole point of the entire book is, how meta can you go? Like, if, like, there's a fourth wall here, how, like, if you're going to break down the fourth wall, are you just going to break the fourth wall? Are you going to drive like a spaceship through? Are you going to, like in the monster truck in Last Action Hero, they accidentally drive the truck through the wall. It's like, boom, here comes the fourth wall. And then they jump through the fourth wall. I mean, that's the whole point of that scene in the Last Action Hero. Drive a truck through a wall and then jump through the fourth wall out from the movie theater. It's very symbolic. And I was like, is that breaking down the fourth wall enough? Is that meta enough? And it seems like John Scalzi has written a book where the entire point is like, how meta can I go until it's too meta? And even has, you know, like a conversation of the characters in the main story. It's like, well, we can't have a TV show which has the same TV show in its own past. They're talking about, it's like, well, when does this past start? So, well, you know, our timeline has to start, you know, after our TV show has been created, because if it, you know, it's exactly what Red Dwarf was doing in, you know, 3 or 4 years ago in their special, you know, Back to Earth special. But anyway, they actually say, well, that would be too meta. I can't believe we're having this conversation and we're not stoned. It's like, well, yeah, being stoned would help this conversation. But, you know, it's like, oh, you're getting too meta. And a character asks, you know, that would be too meta. But is it too meta? And can you get too meta? And for the most part of this book, you know, I thought this book might be badly written by accident. All of the criticisms that I had, I thought, well, you know, that's probably, you know, Scalzi just isn't capable of making characters that sound different to each other. Just like Will Wheaton isn't capable of making an American woman sound different from a Russian man. I mean, he just doesn't seem to have that capability in the entirety of the audiobook. And then you get to the last chapter of the main story, and I was like, oh, okay, yeah, right, I get what you see, what you're doing here. That really pisses me off, but yeah, I get what you're doing. And then we get to Coda 1, and the entire project crashes through that fourth wall and crashes to the floor and flops around for the entirety of Coda 1. And then Coda 2 starts, and I realized what's happening. In Coda 1, 2, and 3, minor characters are given an end to their stories. This is sort of like the first level of what's happening in the codas. It's sort of like, you know, oh, there's this kid who Scalzi in the main story, he wrote that he had a car accident, or he had a bike accident, and he did this for very shallow story and plotting purposes, and it turns out he has a life too. Oh, you mean he was just put into a really bad situation because he's, in this story, he's the red shirt? Is he the red shirt? It turns out, yes, he is the red shirt, and this red shirt of the red shirt story, he's a red shirt, so he's also got his own life. And it turns out he has a life. And oh, what about this script writer? And he had to change his entire approach to writing and make up for, like, shallow story and plotting. And then it got writer's block. It turns out he has a life too, and Coda 1's all about him. And what about this character, you know, who has no point in the plot except to wrap up the emotional journey of a different character, one of the red shirts in the red shirt character? Well, it turns out she has a life too, and we're going to find out about her life. These are the red shirts of the red shirts book. Now, of course, this is the first recursive like meta level, and I thought, well, what's the next step of this meta, and what is the extra meta going on in this coda? And I thought, well, maybe like the bike accident guy has this, you know, a friend in a lawyer firm, and, you know, who risks her job to help him out. And I was like, well, maybe we're going to get a coda to Coda 1. Maybe there's going to be Coda 1.01, and it's going to be how she actually got fired from her job. And but actually, no, we're told she has nothing to worry about. It doesn't actually matter if she gets fired. It doesn't actually matter, because actually she's got lots of money and she doesn't actually have to work for a living, and everything that she does, if everything goes wrong for her, or if anything bad happens to her, it doesn't actually matter. And then we get the code, or are we going to get the code about the code of the sister of the one who's upset, and is she going to work out that her life is devoid of meaning too? Nope, because actually she's happy with her life and everything's sorted, and this one thing that you thought was random chance actually wasn't random chance, and she's got a great husband and she loves him and everything like that. So actually, no, she's going to be fine as well. And I realise he's actually writing out the red shirts of the red shirts of the red shirts are now characters which aren't going to be killed and are going to be fine, because nothing that John Scalzi is going to do to them is going to be bad. He can't do bad to them. Which, again, is like, okay, is that meta enough? Is that meta enough? And I was thinking, well, if you're going to do recursive, why don't make this whole novel of just people going through? But he actually says, I'm not going to write a novel where every next character is just a red shirt in the previous character's story. He actually writes the characters so that they can't be red shirts. Actually, they're going to be fine. There's nothing going to happen to them because in that situation, they're not. And I thought, well, it'd be good to go in a loop, but actually John Scalzi, you know, you go snip. No, no more red. Like in this story that we're going to have the main character who was the red shirts in the red shirts book, but the red shirts of this character are not going to be red shirts. They're actually going to be well-developed characters who have their own full stories and have their full backstories and are going to be fine no matter what happens. So it's like he's pulling his punches, but he's pulling in a punch in a way that goes, ha, I was meta, and I actually wrapped up the meta in a way that you can't say, hey, now you've got to be more meta. I've actually wrapped it up, so I can't be more meta in that way. Which, in a way, is really clever, but it kind of misses the point of the red shirt. Well, it's not missing the point. It's like, if you want to give these minor characters more life and more importance, why didn't you write that into the main story itself? Like, why not make Dahl and Duvall people I really care about? Like the kid who gets knocked about on the motorbike and goes into a coma. And like the woman who has to go this thing and has this really, really nice... Again, I don't want to give spoilers because the code is really good. It's like, I had the really strong emotional characters to these these two characters in the last two coders, in Coda 2 and 3, and I had absolutely no emotional connection to Dahl, to Duvall, to Kaczynski... Maybe Kaczynski's the... Maybe she's from Red Dwarf. Or whatever it is. Kazansky. Whatever it is. All of these different... these characters in the main story. No emotional connection. He writes these two short stories at the end. Coda 2 and 3. And we're told about his problem. And then we see him working out his problem. And he looks around his room. And he reacts to things in his room. We get some description of the things in his room. And we're like, that's really good writing. What? That's really good writing. Scalzi can do really good writing. He made me care about these people in the last two parts of the book. In the last hour of the project, he made me actually care. And it's like, why couldn't he make Dahl so sympathetic? It's a simple writing trick. Make Dahl walk into a room and look around and see his past and react to it as a human being, as a character. Apply it to the main character. Make us care. He never does. Something, 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 translating a third language of the Leshwood Schism. Boring. That's all we know about the boring. Looking through a series of photos on a memory card in a camera. That's really intimate. That's bringing back memories. That's showing feelings. It's like what you point the camera at, like what the characters in Codas 2 and 3 point the camera at and take a picture of means something to them. Them framing the shot of the of their significant other means something about to them. But in the main story, we don't get camera angles. We don't see what the character's like. We just get lots of people in a room talking. And it turns out that the main point of Coda 1, which I hated up until like the last two paragraphs, is the reason the red shirts are written into the script is that it's an easy way to ramp up the tension. Like I mentioned this before, it's obvious. It's the easy way to ramp up the tension. Just kill somebody off. And it turns out creating tension without killing someone is really hard work. It takes writing skills. And yet somehow Scalzi does it in these last two coders. And we're told that, you know, when the scriptwriter discovers this, this is within Coda 1, the scriptwriter, the first person in Coda 1, the first person narrator in Coda 1, he says that when I discovered that creating tension without killing someone is actually... It makes it so it's not lazy anymore. It's not sloppy anymore. I can actually make it better and be a better writer by not being lazy and just killing people off. He says, I went on to write the best 30 pages of my life. And then I thought, and then when I thought back of that after reading Coda 2 and 3 and being really affected, I was like, fuck you, Scalzi! You, after writing that the writer writes he's going to write the best 30 pages of his life, Scalzi goes on to write the best 30 pages of the entire novel and the best 30 pages I've ever read by him. And I was like, fuck! I've listened to 6 hours of the worst audio narration with the worst narration, with the worst dialogue, with the worst characters and all of that, all for John Scalzi's character as the meta narrator to have the lesson that it's actually much better not to be lazy and not to just kill people off and not just have stupid conversations and not just have fart jokes and sex jokes and stuff like that and not to have meaningless, pointless characters doing meaningless stuff with plot holes and stuff like that. All the lessons that John Scalzi says that the narrator in Coda 1 says, suddenly all of those lessons he learns and then he puts them into actions, which makes you say, fuck you! Why did you have to put me through all of that other stuff? Like, it's just... It's just terrible. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like the question, is too much meta too meta? Well, it turns out that I think everybody else who reads this book either likes the meta of the last three coders and actually really enjoy that part and hate the rest of the story, or they really enjoy the rest of the story and they just don't get the meta. So it's like, how much meta is too much? This book is too much meta. Like, if your statement on meta-ness means that you put your readers through, like 5 hours or, you know, 232 pages of terrible, subpar writing with plot holes and terrible characters just to pull out Coda 1, which I hated, but then it sort of turned the corner into 2 and 3, and just to do that, just to play that trick on the end. I mean, sure, it's a best New York Times best-selling novel, or is on the bestseller list. I mean, he's got something here, but do the people who read it as a Star Trek novel really think that that's what it's about? It's not about that at all. He actually just says, how meta is too meta? And I'm like saying, fuck you, this is too meta. I really, really, really disliked the first half, and now I find the whole experiment interesting, but it's not fun. It's not a fun thing. I mean, it's mildly interesting for me to work out what the trick that you're playing is, John Scalzi, if you're listening to this, which you probably aren't. But, like, you go through all of that terrible characterization up until that point, and then the main character, like, the narrator character in Coda 1 goes, oh, well, I don't have to do terrible characterization. And then he does good characterization. Just like, do the whole book like that. Fucking hell. You know, so all of the stuff that I disliked before, none of the red shirts have their own personalities. That's meta. Is that meta? Well, it's written in a lack of description. I know he can do it. Coda 2 and 3, lots of great stuff there. Too simple attribution. It's like, you know, is it intentionally written with really simple attribution to make it read more like a TV script? It would have worked better as a TV script because you're not saying anything that the authors aren't doing, and it's just like someone is sitting down, like Will Wheaton is just sitting down and doing a reading. How about the lack of action in any of the dialogue scenes? It's like, yeah, well, we're doing the boardroom scene here. We don't need any action. We just need the characters to explain plot to each other. Well, that's good, you know. Action would have been better. Oh, maybe action is a bit too expensive. Action is too difficult to write. Well, we'll just have a subtitle saying, and then they went there. Oh, and this plot point is going to be too difficult. Well, let's just write that out. It's like intentionally bad. You know, this character, that's only there for a meta story. Oh, is it? What about these other characters that never have a proper ending to their story? What about the season finale that was kind of tagged and never went on? What about everyone joking, you know, joking about everyone dies stupidly? It's like the list of bad things goes on and on and on. And all of my complaints could be explained away by viewing the whole thing as an exercise in how much meta is too meta, which means it's too meta. It's too meta. Clever joke. Scalzi is obviously a clever guy. Although maybe I'm reading too much of it. Maybe I'm being a Scalzi apologist. I think I do this sometimes. I read stuff into a book and enjoy it. But this time I'm reading the stuff into the book and not enjoying it. You know, it's more interesting for me to rant about the book now than it is for me to actually read the book. It was painful to me to read the book. I didn't get more than 20 minutes into the coda. I would have missed, like, that last 30 minutes of the first coda. I would have missed unless I actually was confronted by you know, Tamahome online and said, are you going to finish it? I was like, well, you know, I think I was just going to read the code. I'm not going to give it a better score because of this. I'm still only going to give it 2 stars or maybe 2.5 stars, you know, because there is this interesting twist at the end, but I've just given it away in this book because I really don't think anyone should read through the book just to get the lesson, just to get the joke. It's like Scalzi is playing a practical joke on people to read shit that he knows he can write better, but he doesn't bother just to play a joke about meta-ness on you. I think it's really insulting. I mean, it's very clever. Very, very clever. He played the joke on me. But it wasn't. That wasn't a joke that I was. It's not like you go into a magic show and you want to be fooled. It's not like reading, like, the Book of the New Sun, where you're going, you get into it and you're like, well, this is obviously, well, you know, everyone says, oh, you've got to read it 3 times to understand it all. It's not like I'm going into a book which I know is full of allusions and full of cleverness. I thought I was going in and getting, like, a Galaxy Quest Star Trek parody kind of thing. That's what it was sold to me. I was like, oh, I just want an easy read. And I didn't expect to have to sit there and go through all the tedious stuff to get to the genius at the end. Because I don't appreciate genius like that. I'd rather just read, like, if I'm going to read a novel, I'd rather just read it. Otherwise, an abridged version would be really awesome. If it was just written as 5 short stories. For example, the prologue, really, really good. Cut down 5 hours of the main story into maybe a 2-hour short story and make it a little bit more knowing, which would have been really good. And then have the 3 coders at the end. You could have got away with it. Yeah. So I think the next novel that I read by Scorsese, I'm going to wait until some reviews come out, or actually go back and read some reviews, and make sure that he's not just playing a joke on all of his readers, and tricking all the Star Trek fans into thinking that they're actually getting something. I mean, it almost feels insulting that he's wanting people to read this, and they're not going to read the codes and not understand it, and he's fine with them just thinking, oh, well, you enjoyed it on the Star Trek level, idiots. And then people like me who actually like good stories and good characters, and it's just terrible. And then at the end, I'm just like, oh, fucking hell. If you're just going to play a joke on me, why don't you just write a blog post where you explain what the joke is going to be? Anyway. Yeah. Red Shirts is too meta. Let's have a look at some notes here. Yeah. Yeah, no matter what I say about the intentional badness of the writing of the first or the middle section of the book, which is the majority of the book, if I'm going to be a Scorsese apologist, and again, maybe I'm cleverer than he is and I'm finding meaning where there isn't any. However, when it gets to the narration by Will Wheaton, really, read it yourself. Don't let Will Wheaton read it to you. So in conclusion, starts good, heads downhill for a long time, and then picks up at the end, which is kind of, unfortunately, like Alderman's Moor, which, like I say, started good, middle terrible, last third good again. And this certainly did pick up, but it only picked up once I got the joke. And I only got the joke when I read the last two coders. And it's, again, insulting to that. So overall, I'm going to give it 2.5 stars, maybe 2. No, I'm going to give it 2 stars because I think I enjoyed this review more. I enjoyed this review way more. I do say that if you just want to get the clever stuff in the main stuff, if you're not interested, let me put it this way. Watch Galaxy Quest, then watch Last Action Hero, then watch Stranger Than Fiction, and then listen to this podcast where I explain how you can be clever and be too meta, and then you get it. That's all you need to do. So don't. So if you want to read the book, go for it. But really, I think I've spoiled this one enough. So thanks a lot for listening. You can email me, luke@juggler.net. Of course, I did some pretty big spoilers in this thing, but again, there's other stuff there. But maybe I should have mentioned this as a spoilerish episode. But fuck it. I think it's good, even if you've read this book. You'll get that. And even if you haven't read this book, actually quite a lot of people, again, with the Kurt Vonnegut book, there's lots of people who review it and go, oh, 1 star, didn't like it, it's just one of that. And I that kind of thing, which I'm just bringing this back up because I mentioned that that review earlier. Lots of people said, oh, I've read Kurt Vonnegut's, but I never got that obvious reading out of it, which for me was an obvious reading, about, where Billy Pilgrim starts making stuff in his head and where reality ends and the fantasy starts. Yeah, there was that kind of reading that I got out of it, which I thought was really obvious and other people didn't get. And by reading the reviews so far that I've got from Amazon, that I checked out on Amazon.com and on Goodreads, nobody else brought out this aspect of it and explained it this clearly. So I think even if you read other reviews, maybe this is good. Of course, I'm saying this at the end, but fuck it. So maybe you got the metiness of this podcast as well. I've only done angry. Yeah, email me, luke@juggler.net. Any feedback? You can follow me on Twitter. Also, goodreads.com. You can follow along with my books that I'm reading, and I post little bits up there, updates and stuff. And also, I really want to know what you're reading, and if you've enjoyed a book or anything like that, it would be great to find out too. How long have I been going on this podcast? I think it's long enough. Wow, over an hour! I didn't realise. Well, passionate review, lots of rants and insight as well. I think it's a good one. If you want to support the podcast, you can always go to audibletrial.com/SFBRP. Get yourself a free audiobook, sign up for a free trial there. And of course, like I say, I'm a Platinum member. I'm not just advertising for the money. I actually want to help you guys out with free audiobooks if you want them. And of course, the money will come in handy to pay for my audiobooks. But then again, I review them and you get enjoyment out of them. So we all benefit in that way. Audible benefits, I benefit, you benefit. Anyway, thanks a lot for listening and I'll catch you next time.